This week, Bernie Sanders landed an endorsement from the United Electrical, Radio, and Machine Workers of America. It's one of the first unions to weigh in on the presidential primary. And we're going to take a few minutes now to look at where the candidates stand on labor issues and what role unions will play in 2020. Here's Senator Elizabeth Warren last week in Iowa.
I've walked picket lines and I've called CEOs to try to get them to settle disputes, to try to get them to recognize unions that were seeking recognition. In other words, I just want to say it this way. If you're looking for a partner in the White House, someone you can count on, then that's who I will be.
Josh Idelson covers labor for Bloomberg, and he joins us now from San Francisco. Hi, Josh.
Thanks for having me.
And we're going to hear from some of the candidates throughout the course of this conversation. Let's start with Bernie Sanders, speaking at the Iowa AFL-CIO convention last week in Des Moines.
What you know and what I know is that the only way we rebuild the crumbling middle class, the only way we provide dignity and security for tens of millions of workers is when we rebuild the trade union movement in this country.
And last week, Sanders unveiled a pretty sweeping labor plan that would extend collective bargaining rights to state and local government employees, allow federal employees to strike, and even create a collective bargaining system that would essentially unionize entire industries, much the way it's done in parts of Europe. Josh, is Bernie Sanders leading the way for Democrats on labor?
Bernie Sanders has set a high bar for other candidates to reach, both in his 2016 presidential campaign and now that he's running again in 2020. That's true in his history of joining worker struggles on picket lines, his calling out specific companies, something we've seen a number of other candidates doing much more in this race. It's true also in policy, where Senator Sanders has introduced a sweeping proposal that would quite fundamentally reboot the labor relations system in the United States. That includes ending so-called at-will employment so that companies no longer legally could fire workers without a so-called just cause for doing so. It includes creating a sectoral bargaining system for negotiations for standards for whole industries. It includes making it easier to strike, easier to organize, easier to punish companies for alleged violations of the law. It is a significant proposal that also takes pieces from what he proposed last year in legislation that was sponsored by many of the other leading candidates as well.
But he also got in just a little bit of trouble with unions lately because of his plan to pass Medicare for all. Now, the fear is that a government plan would supersede the health plans that union members worked hard to negotiate with their employers. So, you know, where do we stand on that and what do labor leaders think about Medicare for all?
Well, the U.S. labor movement is smaller than it used to be, but it is still a big, messy place. And Medicare for All is a place where we've heard different things from labor leaders. The AFL-CIO's longtime position is that it supports a move towards a universal health care system like a Medicare for All system. But AFL-CIO President Richard Trumka recently told reporters that the AFL-CIO's view is there needs to continue to be a role for union-negotiated plans. Other unions have taken a different view. So the Service Employees International Union's president, for example, told me that she found it outrageous for other candidates to suggest that it was contrary to the interests of union members to transition to a public plan and that public plan could not provide the same benefits that people have now. Certainly, the controversy around this is something that the Sanders campaign has been hearing and grappling with, and we've seen in Sanders' latest labor proposals a specific provision that savings from the transition to Medicare for All would need to be used to provide better compensation to union members.
Okay, so let's hear from Joe Biden now. Here he is last week speaking to the AFL-CIO.
There will be no trade agreement in my administration without organized labor sitting at the table. God love you. I need you. Look me over. I promise you, you'll never have a better friend in the White House. I guarantee it.
What can we make of Joe Biden, who has been hit for his ties to the credit card companies that are based in his home state of Delaware? but also he's proud of his Scranton, Pennsylvania roots. He calls himself Working Class Joe. How's he connecting?
We have not heard as much detail yet from Joe Biden on labor policy issues in this campaign as we have from candidates like Bernie Sanders and Pete Buttigieg. Joe Biden certainly has a strong history and connection with some parts of the labor movement. He very quickly, upon entering the race, was endorsed by the Firefighters Union and one of the only national union endorsements so far in this election. He has a record that some people in the labor movement take issue with, for example, his advocacy for the Trans-Pacific Partnership trade deal as part of the Obama administration. And it was noteworthy that Senator Sanders and his proposal specifically took aim at a pension compromise allowing benefit cuts that was signed into law under President Obama when Joe Biden was vice president.
You mentioned Pete Buttigieg. Here he is in Iowa last week.
So I am proposing that we break the spell that has people thinking that freedom in America comes when you just cut regulations on big companies. I believe freedom requires the freedom to organize for a good day's pay for a good day's work.
So you have all of these candidates really pretty eager to get the labor vote. But why? Does labor still hold the kind of political clout that it once did?
Well, organized labor, which once represented several times more workers in the U.S. economy, has shrunk over the years. And it has been a decades-long ongoing decline that has had repercussions for U.S. culture, politics, economics. But that said, organized labor is still by far one of the largest and most significant constituencies in U.S. politics and in the Democratic Party. Unions are a crucially important source of votes, money, activism, and energy, both in Democratic primaries and in general elections. And being able to win over union support in the primary and show that you can appeal to union members in the general election is crucial for Democratic candidates, whatever part of the party they're running from.
And to put a point on that, we looked at some numbers from the Bureau of Labor Statistics that says union membership in 2018 was almost half of what it was in 1983 on just 10.5% of all wage and salary workers. But you're making the point that the labor movement is still politically relevant. And what about in states that are crucially important to Democrats' prospects in 2020, states like Michigan, Pennsylvania, Ohio, Wisconsin, these industrial states that Donald Trump won in 2016.
That's right. While Hillary Clinton still won union voters overall, she won a worse share of union voters than several recent past Democratic candidates. And Donald Trump, without winning the majority of the union vote, was able to overperform for a Republican, particularly in some of those key states like Ohio and Michigan. And that overperformance with union voters by Donald Trump, by some estimates, made the difference in his winning the Electoral College and thus the presidency.
We've noted a couple of the endorsements that these candidates have had. Bernie Sanders has gotten one. Joe Biden has gotten the firefighters. But we really haven't seen a lot more other than that. Do you get the sense that labor is holding back on its endorsements at this point because the field is so large? And what do you expect as we get closer to Election Day?
You know, one strategy as a union to try to grow and advertise your clout is to be a kingmaker. And there can be a big payoff there, but it's also a big gamble if the person you pick doesn't win. We have seen a number of unions signaling this time, including unions that delivered important endorsements before the process was over last time, signaling that for the time being, they're interested in getting as many candidates as possible, prioritizing their priorities, echoing their talking points, embracing their issues, and that they are in no rush to endorse a candidate. In 2016, there was some controversy in some unions when leaders announced endorsements of Hillary Clinton that they said had the support of the majority of the membership, but left at least some members dissatisfied. A number of unions have said they are going to additional lengths this time to make sure that members all feel included and heard in the process. And some unions, like the Service Employees International Union, have been very explicit about what they want to see from candidates, including not only policy proposals, but also willingness to call out specific companies.
And what union is the biggest prize, the gold medal for endorsements?
Well, several unions would say that they are the gold medal. The largest labor group in the United States is the AFL-CIO. The AFL-CIO does not make an endorsement without a substantial majority among its affiliates, and the AFL-CIO has not really weighed in recent years in a presidential election until the Democratic nominee was at least clear, if not official. The largest unions include the National Education Association and the Service Employees International Union and the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, each of which has already held a forum that was attended by many of the front-runner candidates.
All right. They're courting that vote, that is for sure. That's Josh Idelson, a labor reporter for Bloomberg. Thanks very much for your time. We appreciate it.
Thank you.